Today's episode is brought to you by Doing Things.
But I'll tell you what, I spoke with the NRA at the top people, and I spoke, and they gave me tremendous support, and tremendous. I think I had I was probably the earliest one, Kellyanne, from what I hear, ever. You know, they endorsed me at the absolute earliest point that you could. And so I'm a believer. But I spoke to them, and they're ready to do things. They want to do things. You know, they're good people. They're patriots. They love this country. But the NRA is ready to do things. And, you know, people like to blame them, and they do have power and all of that. But they want to do things. They actually came up with certain of the rules and regulations that we have now.
I'm Nate Staley. Welcome to Off Baseline. On the show, I respond to my first bit of listener feedback regarding this past episode about gun violence and mental health. Sam Nunberg, a former Trump political consultant, goes on just about every news studio within a few square miles of New York in a single day, melting down over the Trump-Russia investigation and his potential personal legal implications. But first, a story that is oh so close to home. As some or most of you know, I live in Missouri, a state that, despite having two major metropolitan areas and a couple of, you know, medium-sized metropolitan areas, it went a solid 56% for Donald Trump in the election. Great people. That's in West Texas, right? Love Missouri. And it also swept red in pretty much every other election, well, literally every other election that year, statewide. One of those elections was a new governor, Eric Greitens. He's been a busy person slashing education and housing funding while doing constant photo ops with police and National Guard to portray himself as a tough guy, to follow up his major campaign TV ads, which, well, there's a couple here that we'll just check out here.
I'm Eric Greitens. For too long, Missouri's been run by career politicians, owned by corrupt consultants, high-paid lobbyists, and special interests. While they get rich, Missourians are hurting. Well, I'm no career politician. I'm a Navy SEAL, and I'll take dead aim at politics as usual. I'm Eric Greitens. If you're ready for a conservative outsider, I'm ready to fire away.
There's more where that came from. That one wasn't enough that year, so we got a second one here. This one kind of made third party, but whew, it's a good one.
Eric Greitens is under attack from Obama's Democrat machine. They're trying to steal another Missouri election. But Eric Greitens is a conservative warrior, and when he fights back, he brings out the big guns. Eric Greitens, a governor who will set his sights on politics as usual, reduce spending, create jobs, protect life, defend the Second Amendment, and fight Obama's Democrat machine in their corrupt attacks. Good news for us, bad news for them.
I'm Eric Greitens. Join our mission. Let's take back Missouri.
Yes, they did. They took back Missouri and blew away and every person in the way. I'm particularly struck by the selling point of one of the bullet points of that commercial was protect life over the backdrop of machine gun fire. But so, yeah, this is it's a guy, he's had a very busy first year in office, slashing budgets all over the state for higher education, low income and elderly housing, investments in the arts, and putting out marketing videos just pretty much every single day. News broke in the past month that he's been busy in other ways, too. An investigative report from St. Louis news station KMOV released a story about an affair with a hairdresser, which predates his election, which took a harrowing twist with the story reported from the victim that she was blindfolded and, quote, "I saw a flash through the blindfold and he said, 'You're never going to mention my name. Otherwise, there will be pictures everywhere.'" Crichton's lawyer released an immediate statement stressing several times that it was 3 years ago. Why bring it up now? And Crichton's co-released a statement with his wife admitting to the affair and reiterating this idea was old news. Later on, they released statements specifically denying the blackmail portion. In a very Trumpian, fake news, lying, liberal media sort of angle. And more recently, Greitens was indicted for invasion of privacy, which is a Class D state felony in Missouri. And there's a portion here.
But more than that, charging documents say Greitens also transmitted the image in a manner that allowed access to that image via computer. According to prosecutors and legal experts, that's what makes the charge a felony.
We want to clarify, did you take a picture of the woman in question?
The governor has repeatedly dodged direct questions from the media about whether he took the photo, though he repeatedly denied any blackmail.
There was no blackmail. There was no violence. There was no photograph for blackmail. There was no threat of using a photograph for blackmail.
Leaving the courthouse Thursday evening, Ed Dowd, Greitens' attorney, says they will be seeking to dismiss the charge.
I have never seen anything like this in my life. The charges against the governor are baseless and unfounded. Eric is absolutely innocent of these charges.
There's a lot of talk about impeachment now and kind of across both sides of the aisle. And with an initial investigation underway as sort of pretense for impeachment hearings, it's an interesting saga for any state to go through. It's a curious strategy to admit to one portion of the story and to say the other is fake news. This very personally humiliating and probably traumatizing circumstance, I have trouble seeing where the purely political motivation is to make such a specific charge like that, just to make it up after, you know, a consensual sexual meeting. To be honest, whether he gets impeached or not, whether this was all just made up or not, anything that can delay him from implementing further cuts to the state social safety net, unnecessary work requirements for Medicaid, which would add another barrier to healthcare, including mental health treatment. Basically, if all that comes out of this is slowing that agenda down, you know, I'll take it. That's good enough for me. For a lot of Greitens' policy opponents in Missouri, his staying in office might be the best thing for them. We have a fascinating case study, a vignette of live TV interviews of this guy, Sam Nunberg, former Trump staffer who was kicked off the team around 2015. He worked in 2010 with a Pat Robertson founded organization called American Center for Law and Justice to fight a mosque from being built a couple of blocks from Ground Zero in Manhattan, quoted as saying it would be a travesty to let this building be removed. It would be like removing sunken ships from Pearl Harbor to erect a memorial to the Japanese kamikazes killed in the attack. You know, just a straight one-for-one comparison there, spot on. On social media, posted stuff like calling Obama a socialist, Marxist, Islamo-fascist, Nazi appeaser. Whew! It's a mouthful. And referring to Reverend Al Sharpton's daughter as the N-word. This guy is also a close confidant of Roger Stone, the self-described political villain who designed the admit nothing, deny everything, launch counterattack Trump politic. So this is a clip of one of his several interviews that day. Dozens of interviews, actually. I mean, it was all day he was doing interviews. But this one is one he did with MSNBC.
You got immunity. So you certainly don't have any reason not to testify, right? As you told us today. Not only that, it actually makes it appear that Roger Stone has something to hide because you will not go testify.
He has nothing to hide.
Well, then go testify.
You know what? I'll tell you what. Okay, so I don't mind about testifying. I'm not going to sit there for 80 hours for this document request. I have real work to do. I have to earn a living. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is fair.
Is it possible that in the heat of this, you're having a very strong reaction based on the strong feelings you have, and that over time, you might come around to a different view of this? Is it possible that this is coming in the heat of the moment?
I think that in our discussion and what you said, I would have no problem going to the grand jury. But I, once again, don't want to have to spend 80 hours going over email.
You'd rather spend possibly a year in jail than 80 hours going through emails.
I'm not going to jail. You think I'm going to jail?
I think it was good.
As I initially mentioned, it's a fascinating case study. So let's get into it by saying that we're not really going to do that here. Yeah, so I realize the bait and switch is frustrating there, and but watching these clips of San Nunberg and knowing that there's going to be an endless stream of he's clearly off his meds, he's totally having a nervous breakdown, he's having a manic episode, there can be any amount of amateur hour psychobabble projected from the nosebleeds, and some of it may be accurate in as much as a broken clock is right twice a day, but probably none of it will be helpful. I show the clip to describe sort of what people are fixated on, and you notice it sure makes for good reality TV. You know, the clearly what people are fixated on, you notice it's just about any personality you can draw from the White House or from subsequent campaign presents in their public persona with some sort of trait or symptom. You could probably plug into the DSM-5 and find a myriad of diagnoses to speculate on. People do this with Trump like every single day that there isn't a bigger news story. The problem is that whether you're looking at it from a good faith medical concern perspective, you're just worried about their mental health, or a BS sanctity of the office for saving America, blah, 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 whatever, or even a straight up partisan political perspective, armchair psychoanalysis doesn't provide anything good to the public discourse, and at worst, it can confuse those who have family members or are themselves dealing with mental health issues, and it can promote further stigma toward mental health. Using the language of symptoms and diagnoses to mock, ridicule, invalidate, monetize, what message are you sending to people who are on medication for anxiety or bipolar disorder when you do punditry about, well, he's sure off his meds, look at that disastrous mental breakdown, I hope he gets help after we help him by putting him on live TV to do our show? Look, I'm not saying that I'm above ridicule. I'm only human, in a certain sense. But the next time you hear some liberal doing a segment on Donald Trump's mental health diagnosis or pretending to be concerned about someone from the White House while also putting them in their studios for an interview, so turn it off or call up and call them out on it, or keep watching, whatever, I can't control you. Either way, just know that they can't actually know what they're pontificating to be true without actually having met with them in a clinical setting. And if they did, they couldn't do that segment anyway, because there's such a thing as confidentiality or client-clinician privilege. So whatever you do, just know that there's a better way to spend your time. So I want to read for you some, we have some listener feedback. Dylan Strawn wrote the show on Facebook. He left a comment, and I'll read that comment. He says, "There seems to be a major difference between having a severe mental disorder and having mental health concerns. I've never understood why people say you either have a mental health disorder or you don't. Mental health seems to exist on more of a spectrum. In my mind, mental health issues have always been as common as physical health issues, but for some reason, people feel stigmatized for talking about it. Citing a statistic like only 3% have serious mental health disorders, I believe, is a serious oversight to the conversation about mental health. That being said, I think what makes the situation so much worse is when you have people like the spokesperson for the NRA going on national TV and continuously using words like crazy and mentally insane with no real understanding as to what they mean. If we are going to have a conversation about topics like mental health, we need to learn what the proper terminology and definitions are, so there can be at least the beginnings of an intelligent conversation. So I guess my question to you would be, what terminology should we be using?" Well, that's a pretty good question. And I think most in the field of psychology, Dylan, agree with your assertion that mental health largely exists on a spectrum. There's no doubt that it does. We see that with autism already, defined that way. But I think as they churn out future versions of the DSM, you're likely to see the model utilized more. While in the last episode, I did cite the American Psychiatric Association in saying that the overall contribution of people with serious mental illness to violent crimes is only about 3%. I want to emphasize the point that this is regarding the baseless stigma of linking serious mental health conditions to violent crimes. It's a lot less likely than implied through than it's often implied through media and political talking points. To your main question, what terminology should we be using to describe mental health? Well, first, broadly speaking, I think that it's helpful to remember the point that you brought up, that mental health exists on a spectrum and affects so many of us on a daily basis that we might as well default to people-first language. Well, I mean, we should anyway, but sometimes with our hashtag Western values, it's hard not to be motivated by something you're not personally affected by. It's a person with schizophrenia, not a schizophrenic, a person dealing with bipolar rather than he's a bipolar or I'm a bipolar, a person with a substance abuse problem versus a drug addict. You know, you probably wouldn't say my uncle is a coronary heart disease or my cousin is an obese. You know, this used to happen a lot. When I first started in the therapy world, there would be statements made in this supervision or consultation. I'm working with the borderline who blah, 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 blah. Thankfully, this has changed. I've noticed a bit of a change in this even since I've been in the field. Always kind of struck me as, really? You're working with a borderline? Just Just call people by their names. Give them the individual respect they deserve. And don't try to assert things, especially foreign intruding entities like health issues, into their identity without their consent. It really doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Another thing I'd say, just be mindful of the assumptions and generalizations that you might be making. Perhaps some of the concepts you've accepted your whole life, and I'm saying you, it's just generally, some of the concepts you might have accepted your whole life about mental health might not be accurate or might not be factual. Don't use euphemisms in place of specific mental health issues like disturbed, crazy, weird, demented, when you know that you are literally a 5 to 10 second Google search away from more helpful and descriptive terminology at any given moment, especially when you're talking about it online. So no excuses with your Facebook or your Twitter arguments. This could probably double as how to teach your kids about sex advice too. Be accurate, be scientific, don't beat around the bush. Don't be afraid to talk about it. And if you make an assertion about a specific mental health issue being behind a public safety concern, you damn well better back that up with an ounce of peer-reviewed evidence. I hope I answered your question, Dylan, and maybe perhaps then some. If you have a question that you'd like to have addressed on Off Baseline, tweet the show's Twitter handle at Off Baseline, leave a Facebook comment, or if you'd rather your own voice ask the question live to tape, call the show's new official voicemail. That's 260-300-0125. That's a lot of zeros in that number. Easy to remember. It's 260-300-0125. It's a new feature. Could be interesting. I don't know. And lastly, if you've enjoyed the show and want to support, please go ahead and leave it a review on iTunes. It's weird, but it's something that helps podcasts get rolling along. All right. We'll see you next week. I'm Nate Staley, and thanks for listening.